Thus each one lives in a world of his own creating, and the more nearly his world approximates to that of others around him, the more company, the less solitude will he have. Solitude is one of the worst punishments here, and so those who, though having many faults, yet loved much and had many friends, get their reward. J. W. Does this state remain constant, or do you get to know more people and your former thoughts haunt you less? H. J. L. Now I told you we did progress only last time. You should not ask unnecessary questions, nor try to catch me tripping. I repeat, we do progress as we learn, and particularly as we learn to believe. As to the second part of your question, I don't really know exactly what happens, but as we go on thinking here we create fresh thoughts, and as these are of a nobler nature than those we thought on earth, they refresh us and enable us to bear more easily the grief we feel for our former faults. We realize as faults here things that on earth we deceived ourselves into thinking were not faults. I should add that at first it's rather like a hideous nightmare. All one's dead thoughts come crowding round, but after a time they seem to fall into a distinct order. But I can't explain how. At any rate, things become easier. A lot of what I have been telling you I have recently learnt from my teacher. I have also learnt a lot from some of the others. To return to how I come to you. I just think of you, or, rather, concentrate my thoughts on you to the exclusion of other things. That is getting quite easy. Though at first it was very difficult, but it's not so easy to get your spirit in tune with mine, so that I can communicate with you. I tried several others first. I tried Carrie and I tried. Then I had a shot at F. At last I thought I might be able to get into touch with you. J. W. Then I gather that you are in this world and see it as we do. H. J. L. We are in this world, but not restricted to it. Moreover, it does not look the same to us as to you. We see much more. We see the past, and some, I believe, can see the future, though I cannot. You will understand that, as you dreamt of my death a month before it happened. But I have taxed you long enough. Is there any point you would like to ask about? J. W. Yes. You said something about our lower nature. Do you know whether there are any devils who inspire men with evil thoughts? H.J.L. I do not know. When I was alive I did not believe in them. But since I died I have learnt to believe many things I laughed at then. There may be, for there are good spirits who are never men, but I cannot say I know. J.W. Why don't you ask your teacher? H.J.L. If you were teaching a boy Euclid, and he suddenly asked you a question about some event in history, would you not tell him to wait till the history lesson came? Well, it's the same here. There is so much to learn that I must wait till I come to each thing in its proper place. J. W. I am glad you have come to me like this, but why did you? H. J. L. Partly because I like you, but mainly because I think in this way I can do little good, and it is not easy to do good here. I wish I had done more good when I was on earth. I particularly want you to tell Carrie. She understood me more than most of them did. We were always good friends. I wish I could speak to her, but I can't. You are getting tired, pause. Your mind fails to keep touch, pause. J. W. Yes, I am tired, but I want to ask you something. I can't quite remember what. H. J. L. I will come again, pause. I will come again. Note by J. W. I seem to fall asleep after this, and can remember no more till I awoke next morning. Third vision, January 21, 1914. On the night of January 20, H. J. L. again appeared to me, in a vision. H. J. L. I have come to you again, but only for a short time. I want you to try automatic writing. A man I came across here, called P., suggested it to me. He says he used to live at Sheffield, that he'll show me how to do it, and that it would be a much better method of getting into touch with the still living. He's a decent sort of chap, and I rather like him. J. W. I have tried once or twice, but without any real results. L. Since I died? W. No, some time before. HJL. Well, try again. I've much on hand just now, but I will not forget you. Remember me to carry. Automatic writing, 1. Alone, January 21, 1914. I have come to you as I promised. Mr. P. is helping me. He says he is interested, as he used to live at Sheffield. It's not easy to write this. I hope it is readable. I shan't write any more now. H. J. L. Chapter 2, Introduction of the Officer, Automatic Letter, 2 January 22. In preparation for this, these questions were written down by me on a piece of paper. I was in semi-trance during this and last letters. Questions: 1. Do you not miss your chess and other recreations? 2. Any class distinctions? 3. Do you recognize ancestors or relations or well-known historical personages? Letter: I don't miss my chess because I can still play it. Games, entailing bodily skill, we cannot enjoy, since we have no bodies, but those entailing mental skill are not in the same position. Chess is entirely a mental amusement, so we do play it with our minds or thoughts. I have just been playing with Lasker.1. He beat me, but it was a good game. He just managed to get, there, opposition. We do not, most of us, want bodily pleasures here, but those who do cannot have them. It's for the most part the younger men. We older ones, of the genus Sapiens Homo, had got tired of most of that sort of thing long before we died. Those who do crave for it are being punished for liking that sort of thing too much. Luckily for me, I was an old man, and I never cared much for most of that kind of amusement. As to question 2, of course there are no class distinctions as such. There are no Tories here, perhaps because there's no plunder, 2, but at the same time lack of education in the widest sense results in something which at first sight rather looks like classes, that is, men who think and believe alike each fall into sets. The richer classes, who are more cultured, shall we say, are generally in different groups from the poor. We'll answer number 3 at another time. Goodbye. H. J. L. January 24, 1914. The following was written automatically in the presence of Mr. and Mrs. K., at their house. I was in complete trance in this and all future letters. J. W. Questions: 1. What part of the world was Mr. P. in when he passed over? 2. What do you mean by believe? Believe what? 3. Can you recognize ancestors, relations, historical characters? 1. I later I discovered Lasker was still alive, and taxed him with incongruity. He said he knew, but, nevertheless, just as I was able to enter the sixth plane and return, so was Lasker. Quite number did this, but few were able to retain a clear recollection of what had passed. If they remembered anything at all, they called it a dream. 2. Note by J. W. H. J. L., knowing I was a Tory, often used, when alive, to say the Tories out for plunder and blunder. Letter 1. I'm here. As to question number 1, I will find out an answer in a minute. About number 3, I have not met any historical characters here, but we can, and as we get on into the higher group or set we shall do so. Mr. P. says he died in the Far East, Japan. 3. I am getting on quite well now and will come to you on Monday next. I have met a man who has just come up to us from the set below. He is a most interesting chap. He was a thorough scoundrel before he died, and has been telling me some of his experiences since then. He says he has been through an awful time, and so I'll ask him more about it. I gather he has committed about all the offenses there are. About question 2, I mean belief generally, belief in a future life and God, and in fact belief. The first thing to do is to believe something. It does not so much matter what, so long as you believe. A nigger believing in a fetish is better than a man who believes nothing at all. Believe. I will write again presently. The conditions are better than any before. You need a rest. Try again in half an hour. H. J. L. Witnessed, in autograph, K. January 24, 1914. 6:30. We waited half an hour. This time no questions were asked. Letter 2. I have come. Learn as much as you can on Earth and so save delay afterwards. Now about myself. That man I spoke of is near me. He was a man of good position. Had been an army officer and was turned out for disgraceful conduct. He married a girl and robbed her of her money. Left her behind when he went to India. Seduced a girl there and got her money, murdered a native. They found out about the girl but not about the native. Kicked out of the army. Returned to England. There went in for bogus company promoting. Robbed dozens of poor people of their money. Finally came under the law. Got 5 years. While in prison his wife brought an action for divorce and won it. When he came out, set up as a card sharper. Was discovered and turned out of the various clubs to which he belonged. Then he got in with a young fellow who had a new invention. Ran him for a time, finally murdered him and stole the invention. Got it accepted, and as he was going to sign the agreement was knocked down by a motor bus in the Strand and killed. It was one of the first motor buses invented. He wants to take control. She'll let him for a minute. Note by Ed. Here the style of writing quite changed and the writing itself was done at a great pace. Mr. and Mrs. K. declared that the medium's whole demeanor changed and became excited. Stranger. I'm taking control, but can't manage it properly. I am not doing this for fun. I've been a beast all my life, and if I can do anything to make amends I want to. Sure sometimes. I cannot do this properly yet. I have been a miserable failure all my life. But if Mr. L. will help, as he has promised, she'll doubtless make progress. He wants to take control now. H.J.L. Again. I am afraid he rather exhausted you. I am rather a tyro, but of course he is worse, as he has not had the calming influence of our teacher. He has only just got out of the worst torments, so is disturbed in spirit. Our calmer atmosphere will doubtless make his stuff much more readable. But he was so anxious to do some good at last that I threw correct. This fact was unknown to me. J.W. had to let him try. He shall give you his experiences another time. They will be quite different from mine. He has been much longer here. He died in 1905. So written in text as if he had paused to inquire, Ed. Says it was one of the first motor omnibuses that ever plied. Just his luck. I have taken up almost all the time about him, so we'll now close. H.J.L. ended about 7.30. The following question had been written down by Mr. K. Will the officer give his name? Letter 3. As you have probably gathered, several friends are now helping us, but I have now sent away the officer. He exhausts you too much. Besides, a man helping me here has told me we must be careful. As he has only just got into our set and so might break loose if he comes in touch with Earth too often. He means well, but the spirit is weak. However, we will see no harm comes of it. I have not met any old friends here, and so am a bit lonely, but am making friends with several men. One went up to the next set. He has promised to come and visit us sometimes, and so I hope to be able to report to you something of the set above us. As to question re-officer's name. I do not know it, but can ask him. Shan't do so now, though, or he'd want to take control. I am not sure that he'll give it, rather think at first he won't, but I dare say he will in time. He's a wild sort of person. I can see you all quite well. There are others with you, lots of them. Of course I do not know who they are, as they do not come from my set. But power is waning. Thank Mr. and Mrs. K. Goodbye, H. J. L. Chapter 3. H. J. L. outlines his plan for this book, Vision in a Trance, on the night of January 26, 1914. H. J. L. I am glad we started that automatic writing, as it has proved so successful. I propose to give you a series of such letters, in which I shall endeavor to give a connected account of our life over here. Now I gather that most of the spirit messages which have been received ignore almost everything which does not come under the writer's immediate knowledge. I propose to go further and to give in addition to my own personal experiences those of members of the sets above and below us. By this means I hope to cover at least those three, And as my friend who has passed on to the set above has promised to try and get in touch with a spirit who is passing on to the one above, I may be able to tell you something of the fourth set. I shall endeavor to give you a description of the geography of this region, if so it may be called. Further, I shall give you my own experiences, beginning with my death and entrance to this new life. Further, I have been back to Earth since last I saw you, and have seen a male pass over to us from our side. My teacher took me. I am therefore able to comprehend several incidents in my own death which at first appealed vague and uncertain. Now it is difficult for you to understand our arrangements here, it is very different from what you are usually taught. It is not, however, so much that the original teaching of the church was wrong, but that it has been misinterpreted by its teachers. At the best, however, they only show a part of the truth. Not even here do we know all the truth. Truth is like a diamond with many facets. Each facet contains part, but only part, of the truth. Some facets are larger than others, so all creeds exist because of the facet of truth, however small, which they possess. No faith which had no element of truth could exist at all for any space of time on earth. Often, however, the facet is very small. The larger the amount of truth, the stronger that faith will, as a rule, grow. Thus the Roman Catholics are a numerous body, but neither they nor any sect possess all the truth. They simply form one of the communities which exist in the sets where men believed. There are also Buddhists and heathen there, and, indeed, all religions. From this stage we advance until we have gathered in all truth, and then we shall really know what is meant by God. But that is far hence. Since, however, it is easier for you to comprehend the new facts with which I am about to deal if you can attach them to some theory with which you are acquainted, I shall adopt the general plan of heaven, purgatory, and hell. Be under no misunderstanding, as depicted by many persons these names are wholly misleading. But if accepted as a convenient and rough classification, they will be helpful. One fact, however, you must clearly grasp. So far as I can discover, there is no evidence of the eternity of hell. Drop that idea and the rest will be easy to understand. At the same time, spirits may be in what I will call hell for countless ages. For example, Nero is there still, and likely to remain for many an earthly age. The officer has just come up from hell, and so that proves it is not a place of perpetual torment. But as most spirits who communicate with the living are fairly spiritual ones, they have never been in hell, and so can tell you nothing of it. Many do not know of its existence. For we do not know everything, only what is necessary for our own progress. They need no pains of hell, and so know not of its existence. Herein lies the interest of what the officer will relate. I myself could not tell you what he can from his own experience. Under hell therefore I group all those who did not believe. Purgatory begins with our set. Until you have received the first glimmerings of faith you can make but little progress. When this has once been received the spirit enters our realms. Hence Christ went down into hell to teach the spirits belief. So today exalted spirits sometimes go down thither to teach them to believe. Of heaven we know little here, it is to be with God, and that is enough for us. We are on the lower stage of purgatory, and have far to travel before we reach there. Don't misunderstand me when I speak of hell, I mean simply the realm of unbelief, hardest hill the spirit has to climb. When that is surmounted the slope is easier. When speaking of purgatory you must not think we are unhappy. True, we suffer. But so long as we are progressing we are happy. Our sufferings merely purge away the earthy dross which would drag us down. Another fact that may come as a surprise to you is that we can still fall into sin, or at any rate slip back instead of making steady progress. It is no case of rest and fall asleep. We are, very, busy striving to mount higher. But for us there is little temptation to carnal sin, of that we are free. But the unfortunate beings in hell are still subject to their temptations, and to their own harm can sometimes gratify them. Of that more anon. Now a word to yourself. If at times you weary of this and think it fails in interest, I ask you not to give it up. It is entailing much labor on me, but I do it gladly, for thereby I am making amends for my own slackness on earth. Believe me, you too will benefit, but above all, I hope the world may deign to learn something from what I am trying to communicate. I think I have made plain to you the general plan of what I propose. In reading the news I send, don't jump to any hasty conclusions, but wait and compare the various items. Above all, remember that because I fail to state that a thing or person is there, it does not follow that they do not exist. These realms are so vast that no spirit knows more than a part of them. Before we part, are there any questions you wish to ask me? J. W. Do you have light and darkness here? H. J. L. Not as you understand the words, for this is not a material world, therefore material light has no place here. But there is a kind of spiritual darkness. In hell it is utter darkness, for there is no belief. As to what is here, look, open your eyes, see. Suddenly I perceived we were in a kind of twilight or soft evening light. Here we do not perceive so clearly as those who do believe, therefore we are in this twilight. But as we progress the light becomes stronger. The light, if so you can call it, is within ourselves. We must part now. He began to fade and grow indistinct, then I was alone. Chapter 4. Two strange incidents. I was not sure whether the following dream really formed a continuation of my trance vision of Uncle, or whether it was just an ordinary dream. It was, however, so vivid and peculiar that I entered it. The dual eye dreamt I was clad in a light blue costume of the time of Charles I, and was standing in the hall of a large Jacobean house. The furniture was of that period. Suddenly there was a fierce hammering at the hall door. A manservant opened it, and I saw a man on horseback. He was clad in black, and his beard was black and cut rather short and square round his face in a peculiar manner. His face was very white, and on his head was a tall fur cap. He rushed into the hall and challenged me to a duel. I drew my rapier, which had a jeweled handle, as he drew his. He then snatched up a short sword or long dagger, broad towards the hilt, but with a fine point, and with this parried the thrust from my rapier. My servant cried, "The Italian method," and slipped into my left hand a similar dagger. I can distinctly remember the jar each time our swords were caught on the broad part of the daggers. For at length my blade slipped over his and ran him through the shoulder. He then declared that he would go, but suddenly slipped into the house again and snatched up some papers which were on an oak chest nearby. With these he turned and ran into the garden. Furious at this treachery, I sprang after him and ran him through the body. My blade entered his back between the shoulder blades and came out a little lower down in his chest. He fell and gasped out his life in a few minutes among the flower beds. I fell on the path sobbing and lamenting. As I lay there, I saw the villagers looking through the gates and the servants picking up the body of the dead man. I have a very clear recollection of the intense grief I felt. Then I dreamt that I woke from this dream and saw a picture of a sword, the very one I had used in the fight. I thereupon sprang from bed, the one in our room, and going to the chest of drawers found there a piece of paper. I thereon jotted down in pencil the chief points in my dream lest I should forget it. As a matter of fact I had not really awakened, and in due course awoke in bed. There was no pencil or paper on the chest of drawers. I did not see how this dream could have any connection with Uncle, but determined to ask him. J. W. On January 30th, at 2:50 p.m., Blanche sees H. J. L. Blanche was leaning out of the dining room window and looking into the garden, when she got very excited and declared that she saw the big granddad. He was wearing his black skull cap on his head, and said, "Hello, Chickabiddy." He came floating down from a blue patch high the sky and took hold of her right wrist and tried to pull her up to heaven. She pulled, and he let go and went to various parts of the garden, and looked over the whole place by going up to a big rock on the hill behind the house. November 7, 1916. Have just seen, in the Tower of London, the exact counterpart of the dagger with which I parried his rapier. They are quite different from any dagger I had ever seen before, and were doubtless intended so to be used. She described all this, as it happened, to her mother, who was in the room, pointing in the various directions as the figure changed its position. Mrs. Ward says she seemed perfectly genuine at the time. She repeated it very accurately to me the same evening. She said, "Hello, Grandad," in answer to his greeting. He looked at her with a smiling laugh. And he appeared to be moving round the house and garden. J.W. This is an accurate summary of what took place at about 2:50 p.m. C.W. Blanche is 4 years, 3 months old. Chapter 5. The Officer. January 31. At Sheffield, Letter 6, at 7 p.m., by H. J. L. Questions written down. 1. Officer's name? 2. Had dual dream anything to do with you? 3. Did you come to Blanche on Friday? I am here, and will begin by answering the questions first. Number 3. I did see Blanche. I thought I should like to see where you lived, never having been there. It was my natural attraction, not any deliberate intention of mine that caused the pull. I am trying to write more closely, as Mr. K. asks, but it is not easy yet. Number 2. The dream is curious, as it has nothing to do with me, but is the theme which haunts a friend of mine here. He killed a Pole who had saved his life during the 30 Years' War on the continent. Afterwards, the man entered the secret service of the parliamentarians. His grief was because he killed his benefactor, but he had to, as the man was stealing papers which would have implicated many in a plot to place Charles II on the throne. Why you saw it I can't say, but you evidently did, and since it was his mind picture, identified yourself with him. As to question 1, the officer absolutely refuses to give you his name, and I think his reasons are good. He shall give you them in his own words. I am standing by, so there is no danger. At this point, Mr. K. informs me, my whole manner changed, I became excited, also the way in which I held the pencil changed. The officer. The writing is quite different here. Give my name? No. No. I will give you the reason, though. I have a daughter, isn't it bad enough that she should have my blood in her veins, poor devil? But that she should become known as the daughter of a murderer. No one knows that I murdered those men. If it was once known, what chance would she have in life? Who would marry her? And what of my poor wife? No, if what I write isn't worth your while, do without it, but you'll be unwise. I want to do some good, not harm, to my wife and child. They say I must stop. Mr. L. is going to take control now. Mr. K. saw the change take place in my manner, etc. Ed. H. J. L. I am sorry he would not give his name, but I think he was right. But as I knew he would not, I have persuaded the spirit who has gone to the set above to give his as evidence. He has no reason to fear that it will do harm. He shall introduce himself. Hear my manner and way of holding the pencil changed so markedly that Mr. K. placed a cross against the line thus, X. This is the first time I have taken control, and so will introduce myself and will give you details so that you can prove me. Mr. L. has asked me to help in this important plan of his, and I am to describe, so far as I can, what this set is like, that is the one above that in which they who only half believed are. I was Dr. J. B. P. Principal Emeritus, Congregationalistical. I founded the B. L. B. Dash, was joint editor of the Dash, Dash, and wrote the Dash. I was born December 17, 1830, and died January 26, 1911.5. Mr. K. investigated these facts and found every statement made was correct. We none of us knew what emeritus meant, but looked it up, and found it meant retired or pensioned. As relations of is this enough evidence? My friends would probably never believe that I only half believed, and I hardly realized that this was the case myself. But it was due to overmuch study of theology. I lost, or nearly lost, the substance for the shadow. Now goodbye. Mr. L. is in charge of us, and I shall write as he instructs, giving you, I hope, much useful information which I pray may guide your steps to the realms of light. God bless you all four. Mr. K. marked the following with X to show the change of control. I take control again to close this letter, H. J. L. In the next I shall start giving you the detailed account of my death and first experiences here. The officer and Mr. P. will not appear in the next, rest half an hour. H. J.